All right. Well, I don't know about the rest of you, but I feel a lot more mortal 30 minutes than I was 30 minutes ago after Dr. Binkley's talk. So hopefully what I can present to you today would be something that we can expand and use in other areas across the drier forested conifer ecosystems that we have across this region. And in particular, what I'd like to present today is some research that Dr. Wolfowitz Leon, he was a postdoc student for the Intermountain Forest Tree Nutrition Co-op at the University of Idaho. He conducted a meta-analysis on conifer carrying capacity in our particular region of the Inland Northwest. And I think it has some very good implications of what we can do with the kind of data that is available out there. So why is this important? You know, what's this, this kind of nexus between physiography, the physiology of our conifer species, and at the end of the day, we really want to know how this is playing a role in our forest management. So what kind of implications does it have? You know, what we know that our conifer species are very phenotypically plastic. They can adapt to a wide range of conditions across the landscape because they just can't carry their roots and move if the conditions change. They have to have the genetic structure to allow them to adapt to the conditions. We have a good understanding, too, of the probability of species distribution across the landscape. So with that knowledge, how can we refine this and bring this to a level that we can develop models using the data that's in hand so we can improve our understanding of species distribution and how we can manage them. So what's really important is getting at this whole aspect of site stand dynamics and its effect on forest carrying capacity. In our droughty systems in the interior west where moisture is limiting, our stands, if they get moisture stressed, they're going to be susceptible to insects and disease, fire, and other aspects of mortality. And so we need to know how can we manage these stands in a way that we can make them resilient against these stressors. And this is particularly important, you know, if this climate envelope shifts, if we can understand what's going on with our temperature and moisture patterns, we can help forecast where our systems are going to move to and how we can best manage that. So that's going to help us answer this question. Are our current silvicultural practices adequate for addressing these challenges and helping us develop these resilient systems? One of the metrics that we use today, first developed by L.H. Reinecke in 1933, he was an associate silviculturist at the California Experiment Station. Does anybody have any knowledge of what experiment station Reinecke was at here in California? I tried to find it, but I couldn't. But it's kind of fitting that here we are in Long Beach, California, and this study is based off this whole body of work that he developed in 1933. And essentially what stand density index is, it's kind of a ratio or a measure of tree competition for growing space. It's diameter to density relationships within a forest stand. So for any given stand density, it will have a certain tree size that it can support to a certain point. So if you have increasing tree density down here on the x-axis with increasing tree size on the y-axis, at initiation, when they're just seedlings, they're going to be free to grow, and as they grow and get into their pole and sapling stage, they're not going to have too much intertree competition for site resources, but depending on the species, their light requirements, their moisture requirements, temperature, nutrients, at some point they will start to have competition. And what we see is this is going to be this gray zone. This will be our competition-induced mortality zone. So how does site and how does stand and species all interplay within this graphic? And can we quantitatively try to understand this, particularly because there is a maximum boundary to the biological carrying capacity of any site? And to this date, or for many decades since Reinecke proposed this stand density index metric in 1933, is this upper boundary line was set basically by species. This was species specific. In fact, Reinecke stated in this paper in the Journal of Agriculture Research that it was safe to disregard site as a or site quality as an impact on this maximum boundary line. Now, we can't hold that against him. He didn't have the scale of data at that time to use. He didn't have all our ability to access our soils records, our temperature, our climate records. So he was working with a limited set of data. But current work by Powell in 1999 and much more recently by Aaron Weiskill at the University of New Hampshire suggests otherwise, that sight does have a role to play, just not species. So here at the Intermountain Forest Tree Nutrition Co-op, we are comprised of a suite of private, state, and federal forest land management agencies that drive a research agenda in this region of how can we best improve our forest management practices. And so they said, well, let's do a metadata analysis. Let's assemble all our inventory data that we have on the landscape, and let's do an analysis. So we assembled over 150,000 plots. Every dark plot on here is from either a state, private, or a Forest Service inventory record. We assembled over 4 million tree records with 28 tree species. Each record was geolocated, so we had a precise XY coordinate. For those of you who have tried to work with unfuzzed or obtaining unfuzzed FIA data, this was a two-year process to be able to get this. But we did get permission finally, and we really appreciate their efforts to allow us to use this data because I think it really helped our records. And so we associated with every plot was associated over 100 variables related to stand tree mensurational characteristics, climate, geology, and soils records. Because our objective was, can we quantitatively define this maximum boundary by species as modified by site type? And this was the reason I have this graphic here, was this was the initial plotting of all 150,000 plots worth of information on this one graphic. And what we can see is here across the whole entire inland northwest, across all species and site types, you know, we get this max boundary. Now, this is pretty cool. You know, when you get into biological systems and you can see it's just a clear-cut boundary there, this is a very powerful tool. But we also know that this is the best possible growing site we have in this region. So, you know, we have a maximum carrying capacity of about 630 trees per acre with a 10-inch quadrat mean diameter. That's the classic definition of a maximum stand density index value, is a 10-inch quadrat mean diameter, and you come across to where it hits that max boundary, and you come down and you get your density, and that's at 630 trees per acre. But we want to know, can we decompose this graphic down by site type and species? So we want to focus on the three most common species in our region, ponderosa pine, Douglas fir interior, the variety glauca, and grand fir Aedes grandis, because these three species represent the most important ecological and economic species of this region. And they also kind of cross a variety of site conditions, too. You know, our ponderosa pine are our more xeric sites, more in the mesic to reaching into the frigid. And then grand fir is on the opposite spectrum, more in the eutic systems and in the frigid. And then Douglas fir, because of its wide plasticity, can actually cross between the two. So it allows us to really get a good feel for the different conditions that affect our carrying capacity of these different species on the landscape. But we also have this huge input of climatic variables that we want to try to use to help quantitatively define carrying capacity on the landscape. However, many of these variables are very collinear with each other. And so there's a very high risk of overfitting your model. So we used in SAS PROC VERCLAS to reduce this down to about 5 climate variables. And what I'm going to show you next is our modeling system that we used for this. And it's called Stochastic Frontier Regression Analysis. It actually was developed for econometrics, used to fitting that frontier. Because in traditional regression analysis, we have a plus or a minus error in our model, and so it's hard to define that an upper limit that we can't go beyond. And what this does is, here's the traditional model here that Reinecke proposed, was this diameter to density to diameter relationship here, but it also allows us to input multiple factors to try to, these will be our site factors here. Here's our traditional regression error. But this little U value allows us to set that upper boundary at which those parameter estimates cannot go beyond, and allows us to estimate our frontier boundary. And then we used AIC model selection to identify which models best fit the data. We use PROC-QLIM, which is a qualitative and limited dependent variable model within SAS. So after we built this, we identified the five climatic variables, the topographic variables that were of interest, and also we included soils in this model to see what we come up with. And the first outcome, let's look at topography. And I will go through these graphics here, and they will repeat themselves as far as the format in the next following slides. On the y-axis here, we'll have our density. It's log transformed, as this is an exponential relationship between density and diameter, and so they've been transformed to linearize the data so we can conduct this analysis. The top value is the minimum value observed for a species. So, for instance, an elevation, the minimum observed elevation for where we saw pine was at 5 feet. The middle value will be the mean value. So for, in this case, it was 3,300 feet was the mean value of where we saw ponderosa pine on the landscape. And then this would be the max value of where we observed ponderosa pine on the landscape. So that continues across for the next several slides and by species. And so we can start to look at the sensitivity of a species to each of these different variables and try to understand how each of these different variables affects the carrying capacity on the landscape. So for elevation, we see that for ponderosa pine, elevation at the lower elevations has some degree of impact on carrying capacity, but with across the mean side and up to its max, it's fairly insensitive, actually. The elevation does not play as large of a role as, say, with Douglas fir. Douglas fir has a very significant sensitivity to elevation. What we see here is that our lowest elevations have the most productivity, while our higher elevations have the lowest. Interesting, Grand Fir does not have, there's no elevation effect on Grand Fir. And as we move through, we can see that, for instance, aspect, no aspect influence on ponderosa pine, minimal sensitivity as far as Douglas Fir, but with both Douglas Fir and Grand Fir, what we see is north aspects are the most productive and have the highest carrying capacity. Moving through dryness, annual dryness index. It is the amount of degree days greater than 5, what we see over a growing period. What we see with ponderosa pine, Douglas fir, and Grand fir is an increasing sensitivity to the heat over the season, which makes biological sense. This is physiologically, these make sense. Moisture, summer-spring precipitation ratios. Sensitive, we see with summer that is moisture increases over the summer months, that actually we see them preferring the drier conditions where it's actually less moisture in the summer. So we can see the sensitivity to ponderosa pine, not as sensitive with the Douglas fir, Grand fir. They like continuous moisture over the growing season. Temperature, degree days, no temperature effect on Grand fir, significant influence on the other species as we move through. And 12 minutes goes fast. So with frost-free period, we see sensitivity to the cool periods for Grand fir, which makes we see a little bit more sensitivity in the Grand fir. Mean temperature in the coldest month, we see that Douglas fir has a much wider sensitivity across those climatic patterns there. What's interesting about rock type, we put in rock type to try to elucidate some effect of, say, nutrition or subsurface parent material. And these different parent materials were of effect. However, they did not have the effect that we thought they would have on our models. We also included volcanic ash in our models as it has a high water holding capacity. And we thought we might have some significant inputs there as well. It did 5 to 20% increase in carrying capacity, but not as much. So we'll skip over that. So this is the outcome of our models. We're able to use this metadata analysis to develop this 30-meter scale resolution of maximum carrying capacity across the landscape for our various species, which we can give to our members to incorporate. So in summary, you know, what we found was species is important, but sites are dynamic. And it has an impact. Sight does impact our species carrying capacity. So with this data, we can improve our estimates of maximum density across the landscape, also improve our modeling that we use, because many of our models are using some default values that are not as accurate because they do not incorporate sight into them. So with that, I'm done. I'm not sure if we have time for questions or not. Okay.